Oh, council, can you bring us back in on a closed session?
Yes, the board at 6:30 adjourned to closed session. The board has returned from closed session. The item was conference with labor negotiator. The board has nothing to report.
Thank you. Oops, it's already on. Thank you. And at this point, I would like to call the regular meeting of the Town of Discovery Bay to order. Would you all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Carol, could you call roll call for us, please?
President Graves.
Present.
Vice President Simon.
Present.
Director Dawson.
Here.
Director Pifo. Director Tatro.
Here.
Thank you very much. Before we get started with public comment, I'd actually like to make a comment. I'd like to, many of you have pointed out to me that the previous meeting got out of hand. I agree. One of the primary responsibilities of the board president is to moderate the meeting. I failed at that horribly last 2 weeks ago, and I apologize for that. In an election time, when the fuses grow short, I should have maintained much more control of the meeting, but more importantly, I should have maintained more control of myself. I responded to a situation without forethought and reacted out of the passion for this town. Please accept my apology. At this point, I would like to invite anybody to come forward that would like to make a public comment about items that are not on the agenda. Any? I don't have my glasses on. Anybody raising their hand?
Bill Richardson.
Kevin.
I believe that you would like, Mr. Richardson, you want to speak about something on the consent calendar, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, we'll cover it at that time.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. You'll get an opportunity when that comes around.
Okay.
No public comment. With that, I would like to move to my monthly reports from area agencies. First, I think we're going to hear from Tony Fontenot tonight, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. We're missing a podium tonight for some reason.
Where's the
other one? There's three of them. Where's the one that hikes from you?
Well, they won't go over here.
Why do we even have the AP report on here?
I don't know. Since they used to show up.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
My name is Tony Fondo. I'm your resident crime prevention specialist out in Discovery Bay. Lieutenant Burton is away for his training down south. So last month, for the month of October, we had a total of about 586 calls for service that the officers handled, with 53 reports being generated. You've got the reports I handed out. You can kind of see what's going on. Compared to the month before, with 9 residential burglaries that we had, we only had one reported to us last month. The house was, looks like apparently no signs of forced entry. So the thing that I noticed last month, close to the end of the month, that's starting to come into play that I see, and I've already talked with the resident deputies about it, so they're going to be planning an attack or something. Maybe we'll look at changing the schedules of some sort. We had 5 reported cases of catalytic converters being taken off of cars.
Really?
Really. And they're Toyotas, everyone that I've read. You'll see them in there, theft of vehicle parts. One was right here, why don't I just look at it instead of guess. Yeah, we had the burglary auto, catalytic converter, the ones dated October 8th, 27th, 27th, and the other two, one was on the 26th, and the other one was on the 26th also, which is grand theft of vehicle parts, and the other one was petty theft of vehicle parts. So those are all catalytic converters. Now, we had a rash of this probably 2.5-3 years ago. when I first was initially out here before we were resident positions out here, and I remember we were getting hit hard, 10, 11 of them a weekend, cars were getting hit. But we see this, so I let the deputies know about it now, and we might try to see if we can't work on that and see if we can't curtail the activities.
Why is one petty theft and one's grand theft?
It's just based off of the time when the officer, whoever takes the report, it depends on the value, and you're looking at, I think it's $400, the difference.
It depends on the monetary value of the
and depending on what the
over the year of the vehicle and all that.
We go by what the victim states. We'll ask them how much would it cost if it's under a certain amount. We're going to put it as a misdemeanor versus a felony.
Any comments from the board? Any comments or questions for Mr. Fontenot from the public? Yes, ma'am. Could you come to the podium and speak for us, please?
Were these on SUVs?
You know, I didn't go into details with the reports because we're going to have our meeting of the minds there to look at what we're looking at. But I know before it was the Toyotas and the ones that are simply where you can crawl underneath. Because it's basically getting to the point where I think it's three or four bolts that they can undo, and some of them they just cut, and they just take it. And you won't find out until you start the car the next morning.
And it's very loud.
Yes.
And it has a little bit more power, too, at that point.
That's right. And I'll leave with this. I mean, the little things that we stress so much, lock your car doors, lock them, put the windows up, your houses. If you don't have an alarm system, I recommend looking into it. It's a wise investment. Out of all the burglaries that I've reported to you guys, in fact, I can say this for a fact, ever since I've been working out in this area, in Discovery Bay, for, I don't know, almost 3 years now, off and on as a resident before when I was working in Hope County, I can only remember two incidences off the top of my head where we had the officers responded to an alarm because the door was kicked in on one of them, and I think the window was the other one, and this is a couple of years ago. They had an alarm system. One was monitored by a company, and one was not. The neighbor heard the alarm and called it in. But the officers responded, and they were able to make entry into the home, but that was it, just to the door, to the window, and then they left. The alarm scared them away. All the other burglaries that we had here, 99% were no alarms, and the ones that did have alarms, they didn't use them. And almost like in the month before here, September, I mean, 6 out of the 9 residential burglaries were unsecured. Either an open window or a door was left open. So little things of just locking your door, locking your windows, securing things is the key. And if you can, look into alarms. It might not necessarily have to be monitored, but at least have something that makes a hell of a lot of noise. That way your neighbors will see what's going on.
Dog.
Well, I know some homes we're hit with a dog, so you gotta be careful with that too. Depends on what kind of dog you get. So, I mean, I can't stress that enough, and I hope people do that. Any questions at all? Any concerns at all about anything?
Well, we appreciate you coming, and we thank you for your fine job. It seems like, I can't remember if it's gone down from last month or not, but
it's
in total reports, did it? Is there less reports this month than last month?
Well, the property crimes are less.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of got hit there last couple of months before October. One of the officers adjusted his schedule, started working a little bit earlier during the day, things like that to kind of curtail the activity and just being more presence out there. Trying to get the word out. Some areas of the community are responding. I've got about 2 neighborhood watch groups. I'm going to be meeting with some groups here in the next week. So we're just getting the word out as best we can.
Appreciate that. Also, I think last month there was a couple of weeks where the kids were out of school, so that might have something to do with it, too. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Fire district report. I am going to ask Battalion Chief Burris to come up and give that report, I believe.
He did that on purpose.
Hello, I'm Battalion Chief Burris with East Contra Costa Fire. As you can note, I have changed the format to give you last month versus this month's calls. Total calls for last month, September, were 76, where we had 69 calls for service for the month of October.
I'm now with you. Gotcha. Thank you. Okay.
Those can either be commercial or residential. An exterior fire could be anything as small as a roadside fire to fire next to somebody's house.
See, we're consistent with our auto, actually.
And medical.
Anything you want to talk about this evening in specific, or?
Not at this time.
Okay, any questions from the board on the report? Any questions for the chief from the audience?
You're right behind
us. If I missed it, I don't know how.
It's not that little. Even though I fit into the crowd so well.
So.
We're currently working on that with our CAD system to try to break it out better, but we don't have easy access to get that. If you have a specific call, we can pull it by individual calls, but the 69, you know, the total amount of calls, we're going to bring a stack of threes here to be able to break that up, and we have to run it by individual calls.
Do we have a district-wide effort in terms of how it relates to the before and after?
We're working on trying to get a standard CAD report on that. We don't have anything to use.
Yeah.
It's all manual.
Perfect. Let's let's change places. Let me welcome up Chief Henderson from the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District.
Good evening, Board. As requested by Director Finetti to come and speak to you tonight, just give you a little update on the district and what the Board's been doing for the last couple of months in his absence tonight. Since the budget process went on in June and the budget went into effect in July, the priority of the Board was to start looking at revenue enhancements, as we discussed at that time. Since then, we have hired a consultant with a polling company. We've been working on that for the last couple months. We will be going out and doing polling in November and December to kind of get a temperature of the district for enhancing our revenue. We'll have those results back for our January 10th meeting. In February, the decision's going to have to be made by the Board then if they're ready to move forward, going out for an enhancement, special parcel tax. District's looking at a special parcel tax over an assessment based. It's a little harder to get the special parcel tax. It takes 66 2/3 of the registered voters to approve one versus an assessment where it's 50% plus one. However, cost engineering and what that tax can be used for operational needs is a little easier to use. So that's the direction we're headed. We're headed for a June ballot measure for this special tax. You know, the polling's gonna be interesting, especially looking at what happened in yesterday's elections with different ballot measures within the Far East County and Contra Costa County in general. It didn't look real positive for those who read the paper this morning. But with our financial situation, I see us, we're gonna probably be moving forward with this and needing the voice of the voters to point us in that direction. At the same time we're working on that and looking at this harassment, the other thing that was discussed in the meetings and brought out really strongly in public comment was that the residents of the district really need to see if they wanted to go to an elected board. The first round of a staff report and the process of that was done on Monday night's meeting this week. It's a two-step process. The first step was we have to go to the public and they have to say yes, they want an elected board. After that process is done and the people have spoke that, the next general election, then we would go for the elected board. The other thing staff was directed out of the meeting as far as the elected board going was, were there some cheaper options than running to the special election in June and the general election in November. So staff has been directed to also see about doing it as a mail ballot versus a full election. The first round of costs just doing a full election, especially for a June election, we're looking at about $4.50 a ballot, and we're roughly at 54,500 registered voters within the district. So as you can see, simple math, that's over 200,000 just to run the election. So we're going to look at seeing what we can do for the best bang for our buck as we're moving forward with that. District also in the revenue enhancement thing is working diligently right now to look at some costs for services for non-residents, such as auto accidents, other specialized things. We'll probably be doing a public hearing in our January meeting to look at fees for service and doing that revenue thing. So those are probably the three major projects that are going on within the district. Our assessed valuation on the estimate looks like it's coming in a little better than what was expected. During budget time, we were looking at somewhere in that 9-10%. It looks like we're gonna come in somewhere around 4.5-5%. But until we get the actual fees coming in December 16th, where we can see what the revenue actually comes in, we'll really know how hard our assessed valuation and everything's hit. With that, that's kind of a quick little overshot of what we're doing district-wide, and I'm available for any questions.
Glad you have some.
What consultant did you guys decide to go with?
We're using SCI Consulting out of Vacaville. They specialize in assessments for special districts. I've done a lot of fire. They have about a 25-year experience level, and they had a couple other measures on the ballot last night that I'm kind of interested to see how those worked out also.
Board? Go ahead, Ray.
Best case scenario, then you'd have a special elected board after 2012?
Best case scenario, if the ballot was a, if the elected came back, we did it in November, the ballots or the election would be approved in December, we could place an elected board in either in December of 11 or January of 12. Same thing, looking at the enhancement, the reason why we're pushing so hard for the June, that we can make the tax roll in August and see the revenue come into the district in December. So we're on a very aggressive pace to try to make these things happen.
Director Simon.
What's the cost for the consultant?
Consultant was approved for $32,000.
Okay, and what's the, is that in, I know you've got a poll, you're taking a survey or a public poll, is that included in this or is that another cost?
No, that's all inclusive in that.
So you got $232,000 there. You got $200,000 for special election. Where's this money coming from?
If the board approves for the special election, it's all coming out of our fund balance, out of our reserves that we are going through quickly.
Okay, let me ask you another question. So let's say they approve this for $232,000. Let's say it's $250,000 or whatever it comes out to be. The people that are going to be voting on this are residents of Bethel Island, Oakley, Brentwood, Discovery Bay, Byron. What are the chances of anybody in Oakley, Bethel Island, or Brentwood voting for this when they've already got full fire service? What do they have to gain?
If the district doesn't receive any additional revenue sources, you're going to see another round of cutting. The rate we're going, we're looking at bankruptcy in the end of the fiscal year of 12-13.
I'm just thinking, as a resident, not as a board member, we're going to spend close to 250 grand on something that I am absolutely positive. I know if I lived in Brentwood right now, I would say, let's wait till it really gets desperate. Let's wait another year because I don't have the money to pay it right now. And I think these people are going to vote no. And I think we're taking 232 grand and throwing it down the toilet. That's just my opinion.
I understand what you're saying there, and it's a double-edged sword. If the board starts making additional cuts and hasn't gone out and asked the public, are they willing to pay some, the same people could be out there saying, well, you haven't asked us if we're willing to pay any additional taxes. You know, the one thing with the polling, we're at least going to be able to get a temperature of the threshold for a special tax. So we're not just throwing the special tax out there and not knowing if we're in the right range.
Do you have any idea what the per family asking is going to be for this?
We're letting them work that out, and the survey is still being worked on, so that number's not out there.
Thank you.
Mark, they're going to ask for what they
couple questions. First of all, parcel tax assessment, are those both reoccurring, and are they a one-time deal, or are they a reoccurring event for either and both?
The way they would be set up, some of the, looking at what's being commonly done in the market, they're either doing a 5-year or 10-year sunset on.
Okay. Secondly, will the funds that are being used, that would be received from revenue enhancement, go to bolster the reserve, or would they go to, would any of that, those funds go to reestablish service in areas where they were cut?
And those exact questions were asked by directors in a workshop we did this week, and those would be board decisions that would need to be made probably for the ballot measure, so the public would know before they went out.
No, I think that'd be a great idea. And thirdly, it was my understanding that when the district was set up, it was set up that it would have to eventually become a community service district, to where it would have to have elected officials. Why is this a decision that the people have to make again now?
Under the fire district law, that the district was set up in originally, to change it from an appointed board to an elected board, it states it needs to be done in two steps. One, it has to be, do you want an appointed or elected board? One, and two, it goes in that. And that was done through our district council that came up with that.
Okay.
But I can also tell you, when we were still being directed by the Board of Supervisors, while they were wearing their their Board of Directors hat versus their Board of Supervisors thing, the same legal question was answered to county council in 2008, and the same answer came back that it was a two-step process.
So that was kind of that. So I was getting a little bit of misinformation there. It's not quite as simple as I understood it to be. Then it definitely has to be a referendum from the people.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Any questions or concerns from the public for Chief Anderson? Mr. Mankin, can you?
Yeah, I went to the meeting on Monday, and I scribbled a whole bunch of notes, and unfortunately I left them in my car, so I'm unprepared. But there's a lot of things in the workshop, Chief, that were both informative, but few that were alarming. The $96, I don't know if that was hashed out between the executive committee and the consultant or whatever, but $96 is in their own slide to maintain services. That's actually the first line in the bullet list of what their goals are.
The consultants suggest that most ballot measures that are being approved anywhere in California, especially with the current economy and everything, are under $100. Mm-hmm. Their recommendation during the workshop is that when the polling goes, that they look at a number that's under $100. The polling company did in their slide have $96. The board will have the decision both setting some of the numbers for the polling company, and if setting that final number for the election when it's time for that. But you're right, $96 was shown there.
Yeah.
That $96, using the amount of parcels and everything, is approximately a $4 million revenue enhancement to the district. The consultant also discussed that, you know, there'd be, to be successful, that you need to look at having senior exemptions as also part of that. So you could see that $4 million dropping down when you start looking at those different things that could be part of the tax measure.
So the problem I saw, and there's a little bit of disagreement within the board, I didn't realize that at the time of the presentation, but actually from some conversations outside afterwards, but there was a comment from Director Becknell about Brentwood money, and he's clearly not keen on Brentwood money supplementing the rest of the district, so that's a bit of a problem. There's a power structure there, or a power struggle with some of the Oakley folks. But my problem is this, in a matter of perspective, I paid $200 for P6 money today for police services. If you come at me with a question, do I want to pay $96 to maintain services, which frankly in the town of Discovery Bay suck, to just be blunt about it, that question is different than if you come to me and say, will you pay $150 to $200 to reopen your stations with three people and a paramedic? That's an entirely different answer. The first one, I'm going to say, no way. Because number one, I'm going to send $100 to a group of people who have demonstrated they don't have our community at heart. If you write the ballot measure so it has a return to source requirement and it properly funds your district to get 3-0 with a paramedic, where do I write the check to?
Yeah.
It's a different answer entirely. And they're thinking small over there. I don't know who's driving that. I have no idea, but talking to members outside, it's not universal across that board. You need to think bigger picture if you want to properly fund the district. In my opinion, properly fund the district, get this station back open, and give your guys some breathing room. Because the 3-7 just keeps the doors open on what you got, which, you know, that doesn't really fix anybody's problem. So just, and there's a bunch of other notes, that's for another day, but I just think that the path that they're on with the consultant and with some subset of the board is not the right path to a good solution. But a return to source requirement so this community gets a benefit out of that, I think is absolutely essential. Because these guys have already shown their cards, they don't care about us. We're just a burden to the cities in terms of fire service. So something to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Megan. Any other questions, concerns for the chief? Well, you know what? Appreciate the hot seat that you're in. Appreciate how difficult some of these things are to tackle. I would tell you that we don't feel that we're being fairly represented on that board. For my own personal, as Kevin Graves, I'm telling you as a resident of Discovery Bay, I don't feel I'm being represented fairly on the board. I don't believe that the proper considerations were made with regards to how the closure should be made. Not personal, remember, they voted on it, not you. Because I don't believe that response times were considered as they should have. And I think it's important that, and I don't know if it's a staffing issue or whether it's possible to have something on your website that lists response times for calls, or is that just too labor intensive?
Well, we're currently trying to redo our website so we can at least get our agendas on there, so we're not having to manually every month send the agendas out and try to get that in there, getting the response times. We're having to work with another agency because we don't dispatch ourselves as far as response times. But I can tell you, if there's a call in question, please call me, email me, and I will make sure that you can get that call right away. We are trying to get something so we can start putting some average response times out monthly, because you're not the only community that would like it. I'd like it at my fingertips so it's not labor intensive. But for me to do it right now for the calls you do, I pretty much have to take every call that responded. You know, so if there were 69 calls and then divide the total number by that to come up with that. I don't have a better system right now, unfortunately, to do that. And in this modern time, you would hope we would, but we don't.
And it's a two-edged sword, because I'm not sure that there's people in Discovery Bay that want that number published either. So anyway, thank you again for your report and for coming. If anything else that you would want to add?
Nope. And, anytime that you would like my presence at one of your meetings, please. So all you have to do is ask, and I'm happy to come out for any of your meetings. And
we understand. Thank you very much, Chief. Good job. Code enforcement, no report there.
No, we do have a report.
Oh, code enforcement, we have a report. I mean, we haven't had a report in 10 months. The one time I say we don't have one.
Make it a good one.
What's that?
What's that old receipt? Oops.
Dave, talk about this.
Let's go, John. This is so awesome.
How
are you feeling?
Do you
have
enough
of
your gender or what?
Let's do some
cheers. Let's
go, John. Yeah. It's over, dude.
No, it's not. There's a parade today. I taught my little one to go. I go,
Buster. You go there?
Good evening. I'm Patty Cookson, and I'm your Discovery Bay Code Enforcement Officer, and I was here 10 months ago. I'm here again tonight, and tonight I'd like to introduce Comrade Fromm, who is our Senior Code Enforcement Officer, and he's now in the Brentwood office, and he has a PowerPoint that he'd like to share with you this evening.
Fantastic.
Good evening. As Patty said, that I'm the Senior Code Enforcement Officer for the East County area. So it's not just Discovery Bay, it's not just the District 3, I take care of District 5 as well. On June 1st, we reorganized code enforcement a little bit. We went from a chief of a department to three seniors covering the entire county. It was a reorganization done by the director of the department. And so what it got was it got me to the East County office. I oversee or as a lead for three code enforcement officers, so I can backfill for Patty, or I also give her direction that the office they probably didn't have before. It's not taking Patty out of there, she's still gonna be here. But so you understand, although Discovery Bay is like the most populated area that she covers, she also covers other areas such as Nice and Byron, unincorporated Oakley, unincorporated Brentwood, Marsh Creek, Mount Diablo. She's got a large area she covers. So again, I'm here to help. So I have since June 1st. We did some reorganization stuff, but I've started picking up some cases to help her out. I just want to let everybody know, these are the generalized things that we cover. Construction work without permits. You know, these are the major things. There's a ton of stuff that this breaks down into, but these are the overall things. Residential property nuisance covers things like weeds and trash, garbage, debris being kept in yards, substandard buildings. I've only been out here for a little bit. Hopefully you guys don't have a lot of that, so that should be a major concern. I do know vacant structures probably has come up because of foreclosed properties, and that's a very specific ordinance, and it helps out a lot there, and it's not specific for foreclosed properties. If it's a personal person that's just letting their structure go, letting it go, it falls under there, and so we use that one. Vacant properties, I don't know if you have a lot of that. That's vacant lots. So that may not be a major concern either. Rental inspections. There was a rental program in the county that started about 5 years ago, and recently that was revamped. And although they revised the ordinance and approved it, it's not being used quite yet, because since they redid it, we have to set up a structure to do that. The code enforcement is going to take that on, so they will be doing a rental program. And when that comes up and running, hopefully, probably around the first of the year, we can maybe get you more information on that. We also do zoning and planning. Again, that's a very broad thing, covers a lot of stuff. Land uses kind of falls under that as well. Abandoned vehicles, that's a program we took on about a year ago, and I know Patty's been doing a lot of that out here. Graffiti, I think I heard some of that might become a problem now. That's one that's being brought up a couple places. We have a separate ordinance for graffiti, and we're in the midst of trying to redo the ordinance, so it makes it easier for us to utilize that ordinance and make people clean up their graffiti. And then mobile home manufactured home park inspections. That's another program. Unfortunately, the county is going through a budget crisis as well. We had some layoffs, but they redid some things and have moved people into different positions. We lost the person that did the mobile home park inspections. That's another thing code enforcement is now taking on, is park inspections. And I know in East County there are some mobile home parks, so that's actually going to take up some of Patty's time as well as my own. You know, seeing some of the cases that Patty's done and just talking with her, these are seem like some of the common violations that we see in Discovery Bay. We don't want to direct you and say, hey, this is what we're looking for out here. We want you to come back and get some public input and what you'd be interested or what you want us to look for, the major things you want us to go when we're patrolling the area, what we should be looking for. That's really our goal here tonight. I just have a couple examples of some of these common violations we've seen in Discovery Bay. And again, the pictures aren't from Discovery Bay. They're examples of things. So signage is one. There's an ordinance for signage, and then there's something about businesses that have conditions of approval for certain places. I know there's a shopping center out here that have had some signage problems, but sounds like Patty's doing a great job of that. But other signs, people doing garage sale signs, putting up off-site signs for businesses, that's a major problem. And just let us know about it. Overgrown weeds. That probably is a common thing with vacant structures. I hope it's not a common problem with people actually living in their homes, but we take care of overgrown weeds. RVs and boats have to be, pretty sure everybody's aware of that, have to be screened from public view. 90% of the boat or RV has to be screened from public view. Vacant structures, again, like I said, I know that has come a problem recently, and but we have an ordinance that it's actually a quicker process when it's a vacant structure. They redid that ordinance probably about a year and a half ago so that we could shorten the time and we could get banks and personal people to take care of their properties quicker. And if they don't, the county does have the means to take care of those properties. And abandoned vehicles. Doesn't just apply to a vehicle that's got flat tires, no tires, busted up, broken. And we cover what's on private property. We don't cover the street. That's CHP, the Highway Patrol covers the street. Any vehicle that's on private property and it's abandoned, neglected. So if it is damaged or in disrepair like this, if it's non-op, but we even look at abandoned. If a car sits somewhere in one place for too long, we can tag that. All that has to be done is that you have to prove that it's operable, which means get in, start it, move it forward, move it back, and then we leave it alone. But again, we do it on private property. It doesn't just be the driveway, even if it was in a backyard or something like that, anywhere on the property. It has to, if it's non-op, it has to go in a garage or it has to be removed from the property. To get a complaint to us, you can fill out a handwritten complaint to our office in East County. Is that a 1191 Central Boulevard, Suite C. So you can come in and fill out a complaint form there. Unfortunately, we didn't bring any tonight, so people would have them. But you can also do an online submittal. You can go to the county website. They have a forms thing on the side. When you click there, the code enforcement complaint form will come up. You can either fill it out and hit submit right from there, or you can fill it out, print it off, or print it off, fill it out, and you can fax it to us, the numbers right on the form. We also get referrals from other departments. If you complain to a sheriff, if you complain to environmental health, they fill out a form and send it over to us. We get a lot of complaints that way as well. The code enforcement process, just a general overall breakdown, what we do. If there's a violation, we send what we call a notice to comply, telling them they're in violation and they have to comply. If they don't work with us, we get to a point where we send an intent to record, and then we'll record the violation against the property, which clouds the title. Most people don't want that, so they usually work with us before we get to that point. If after we record and they still don't want to work with us, the two processes we have are abatement and administrative fine. Abatement is the county goes out and takes care of the violation, be it trash, weeds, illegal work, something like that. We'll actually go out and remove it. Again, that's a cost that the county incurs, and then it's put back on the property. We have to build the property for that. And then the other process, administrative fine, is can be a hefty fine, anywhere from $4,000 to $14,000 if someone is in violation. Other referrals, just things that some people think that we do, and but we don't. They need to go to these other offices. The sheriff does criminal acts. Abandoned vehicles on the street, sheriff, they'll turn it over to CHP, or I think they can do it themselves. Environmental health, they deal with no garbage service. If there's hazardous materials on the property, or if it's dumped in garbage waste, we'll deal with garbage and waste. But if it's dumped, environmental health a lot of times will do an investigation to see who dumped it. So it's better to go with them. Public works, they do street cleaning, side obstructions from around street corners, sidewalk, drywalk, driveway problems. They deal with encroachments. If anybody's doing work within the sidewalk area, that's on public works. Same with if obstructions on street corners, if it's trees, bushes, things like that. And that's it.
They get to go first.
First, I'd like to ask the board if they have any questions for.
Just a minor question. What's the response time if somebody sends a form in?
If we get a reform in, we usually go out same day if it's early morning or it's next day. But it depends on the complaints as well. Sometimes if they're generalized complaints, we'll send what we call a courtesy letter, which just is sent to them saying, hey, it's been reported that there's a violation. It usually is, it's supposed to be a simple letter that prompts them to call us so we can set up a time to meet.
Do you guys have any leniency at all? I know some of the owners of the stores are suffering a lot. I mean, they're having sales or doing whatever they can do to survive rather than have an empty building. If somebody puts a sign out for the day that says 40% off of something, and they pull it back in at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and put it away, is...
What would happen is if we got a if we didn't get a complaint and the sign wasn't seen, it's not going to matter. If we got a complaint and then we go out and the sign's already gone, it's not going to be a big deal. If we were to go out and the sign was there, you know, I think Patty's pretty good about talking to the people. You just talk to them, and if they say, hey, it's going to be in by 5, okay, I'll drive by tomorrow, make sure it's not there.
So there is somebody.
We really try to work with people. I talked about the enforcement things we can do. We try to avoid that. We'd rather work with people. And the director, when we changed around June 1st, her goal is more for us to be community-oriented. Work with the community, get to know the community to get to know us. We want to get to a point, we'd love to get to a point where we don't have to enforce anything. It's more just making people aware.
Thank you.
Brian, anything? Yes, ma'am.
What about on abandoned homes or bank-owned or homes for sale that are in disrepair? They might look okay from the outside, but I was looking at some homes with a friend who was interested in buying, and some of the decks and the docks are really dangerous, and at Discovery Bay a lot of our homes don't have gates and fences all the way around unless we have a swimming pool or something. So I'm just wondering, is that a code enforcement issue when you've got a dangerous situation and there's no gate or fence and there's nobody living there? This one deck I saw was, if you put 1 foot, you were going to go straight down.
That would fall under our realm. It would be considered substandard. Anything in the home or even an accessory to the home, if it's in a disrepair of some sort, it can be considered substandard. At that point, what we would do is we would require them to repair it.
To repair it or just to fence it off?
No, to repair it. You know, there's certain instances. Let's say it was a private person and they said they didn't have the money to do it. If they were to fence it off somehow, we can work with people that way. But the best case scenario is for it to be repaired. Even if it's bank owned, we do get some banks that will repair and take care of stuff. Because they want to be able to fix it up and sell it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then I'll write you a little form. I'm just worried somebody's going to go through that deck.
Bob?
Within our HOA, the board regularly and consistently on vacant properties just doesn't know what to do. They're looking at each other, deer in the headlights, the whole deal. So it appears, and I wasn't aware of this before, that you have leverage with the banks directly. You have pretty good track record of tracking them down and put some leverage on to take action.
Yes. Okay. In the beginning, when the housing market started to dip, it got really bad. Banks were non-responsive at all. And the county incurred a lot of cost in cleaning up a lot of these foreclosed properties. And people were damaging them on the way out, throwing trash, and taking their stuff and leaving the trash on the lawn. And so the county, that's why we changed our process about a year and a half, 2 years ago, because we had to crunch it down. It was taking us 3 months to get to a point where we could get it cleaned up, or even longer. And now we're down to roughly 30, 40 days from when we get the complaint. If they're not taking care of it, we should be able to get to that point. And the banks are being more responsive.
And we're probably neighbors, you know, they got blight in their block and they're going on the property trying to take care of somebody else's stuff, which is liability issues, and that's good.
I think realtors are responsive to a point. You know, if there's a realtor sign outside, you just give them a call and say cleaned up. It does come down to that line of when the property is owned by the bank and when not. Because banks hold off on a notice of default. You know, they'll do the notice of default, but they won't take ownership of the property. And they would use that as an excuse saying, we don't own the property yet. You know, even though, yeah, we filed a notice of default, the people are even gone, but we don't own it yet, so we can't do anything. So sometimes that becomes a problem. But the bank a lot of times will work with us because we'll just tell them, well, if you don't do it, we will, and then we'll put it on notice on the house, and you're going to have to pay it anyway.
Right.
And then even when we've done it, a lot of the banks are responsive in the end where they're willing to pay us for the services that we provided because they would have had to do it anyway.
Let me just say, yeah, before we go any further, because I don't want to think anybody's picking on them, please come forward and speak into the microphone from the podium. Not because we're control freaks, but because this is all going onto the website. People in the community want to know what we're asking questions that they may want to have answers to. So it was my fault I didn't do that initially, but please, if you have a question, please come to the podium and speak into the microphone so we get it recorded. So any questions? Mrs. Richardson.
Okay, this is kind of a Snoop sister question. Doesn't have really a lot to do with Discovery Bay. But in Brentwood, I think it's where Foothill and Golf Course, there's a light there, and you take the one road that goes up into Shadow Lakes. There's a house that burned, and it has been sitting like for 2 years, and the roof's completely gone, and they've been hauling up. I mean, they haven't touched it until last week, and I just wonder, does that a burned home fall under, what does that fall under?
It does, I think. Foothill Golf Course is that city
of Brentwood. Yeah, city of Brentwood. But if you were to have one.
It would fall under that substandard condition. We get notification when there are fires, and we usually go out, and our main thing is just to make sure that the property is safe. So safe from the public, not so much safe from the owner. You know, we make sure that if it's a bad fire, it's fenced off, or if the building's leaning or something.
This has been 2 years, and I thought that was ample time for any insurance company to work out whatever they were doing.
And it should be. It's the city, and the city has the same kind of process with you. They have code enforcement, and they have building inspectors that take care of that stuff. But that one in particular would be the city of Brentwood. But in the county, yeah, we would follow through. You know, a lot of times when people have a fire, it's emotional for them. It's a hardship for them. So we're trying not to be too hard on people when they have fires. But after so long, you're right. It does need to be. So I think if you would send a complaint to the city of Brentwood, I'm pretty sure they would at least take a look at it.
Wiz, did you have something?
Yeah. I guess the other the hedge blocking a view on the street, is that under code enforcement?
If it's blocking the view of a street, yeah. So you're talking around a corner?
Right, that one.
That's actually a public works. They regulate that. There is a standard for that. I can't tell you offhand, but it's public.
Any other questions from the public? Mr. Steele. The man of steel.
Hi, I'm Chris Steele. I'm a board member and member of the Chamber of Commerce in Discovery Bay.
And some of the members, small business owners in our town have had the code enforcement visit them. They're in the shopping center areas around here for window signage, special signage, special lunch specials. And I just want to bring up that there are small businesses struggling out here. And I do, I would like to get a contact and talking about getting a variance for these folks. The chamber is trying to build business out here and trying to keep our local, our neighbors employed out here. And so I'm not fully aware of all the codes and what the what those issues are, but I do want to ask for some leniency, or I do want to get the chamber involved in the conversation on how to change the ordinances so that these businesses can promote better without having cheap window art. We want to keep it upscale and keep it nice. And I think those examples you showed of Brentwood and Mr. Santee and stuff, that's not really representative of what Discover Bay is doing. But I think that needs to be a review and a good conversation going with the chamber members and your organization and these ordinances in place. But just a quick comment. Thank you very much.
Mr. Steele, I'd like to reply to that. The county, of course, wants to work with all the proprietors, and we do. There's the shopping center, the Sandy Cove Shopping Center, and that specific shopping center, when it was built or before it was built, they agreed to some conditions of approval, and specifically the signage. And it's very specific as to what you can have in that shopping center. If they want to go ahead and change it, then they can apply with the Community Development Department to make that change to signage. So that's always a possibility. We don't need to change the ordinance, just need to apply for some changes to the conditions of approval specific to that shopping center. And the other one is at the entrance, the shopping center at the steakhouse, it also has conditions of approval specific to signage. And so you're not allowed to put sandwich board signs out or anything. It's very strict, and they've been very responsive. I've reminded them and asked them, and they've removed it because it's the right thing to do. And the corner that Conrad showed you with all the various signs, we had that here when we were leaving Discovery Bay on Highway 4. We had all these signs, and it looked like that. So it's looked really great for the last year. It's just been wonderful. It used to look like it did last week with all of the signs. Yeah, it used to look like that all the time.
Ask
how
big the biggest one was.
No comment. Right. So we're willing to work with everybody, and we do understand, okay?
Yes, thank you for that. And Chris, I would suggest that you invite these people to one of your chamber meetings and invite those concerned to have that discussion so they understand the process. I'm sure they'd be willing to come out and discuss that with them. Any other questions for Conrad? Thank you, Patty, for that input.
On that note, if you do ask us to come out, we do have a planner that works out of that office, too.
Oh, yeah,
she'd be more than willing to probably come out there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the presentation. Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. That answered some questions for me that I wasn't sure on, and a good presentation. Rick, did you have some?
I have one other thing.
Go. I'm sorry.
We do at the county. They just redid the weatherization program. Weatherization is a program that they come out to homes and weatherize them. It's usually for low income. But they revise weatherization to make the income a little bit higher. They come out and they'll weather seal the house, weather strip. They look at your appliances. They do a duct loader test, which checks the tightness of the home, finds leaks, they repair leaks. I think they can even change windows in some instances, water heaters that are inefficient, furnaces that are inefficient. Along with that program, there's another one that just came up. It's an energy compliance program, and it's the income level for that is even higher. I think it's even up to 60,000, some thousand range like
for,
that.
For one person,
and
two, it jumps up considerably.
And that's for energy, because January 1st we're supposed to get a new set of codes, and now we have the green building code. It's kind of going down that path. They're trying to get people to they'll come into your house and they'll, I don't know if it's a free service or if it's a low cost service, but they talk about changing light fixtures and doing things that make your house more energy efficient. So there's those kind of programs out there as well.
I'll bring flyers by the office for next week to make sure that you have them.
That would be great.
They're wonderful programs.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you again for the presentation, and thank you for taking the time to come out here. We really appreciate it.
Would you want me to leave some business cards here?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll leave them on that back to you.
Whatever staff would like you to do.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you again.
Karen?
Karen?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Dandy.
You're awfully quiet back there.
I know, I try. I just first off want to thank Conrad and Patty for coming out here.
Absolutely.
We are really trying to get our county staff connected with the communities they work with. So this is one example of how we're doing that. So thank you again for coming. They are both great. For my report, at the board meeting yesterday, the California Vehicle Code enactment for the Country Club hearing took place. It was unanimously approved. So again, this gives the CHP and the Sheriff's Office the ability to enforce the California Vehicle Code on the private streets within the Country Club. It is similar to what took place several months ago in the Lakes and Lakeshore communities. Update on your chip seal project. All the traffic line striping is done. There are some remaining pavement markings that need to go down on the road, such as stop bars at intersections, the 25 mile an hour messages on the roadway, and the straight and turn arrows. This is scheduled to be completed by the end of this week, and that will fully complete the project. The reason for the delay in the completing of the complete project was a statewide supply problem with the thermoplastic material that is used to make the stripes and pavement markings. So we're getting there, maybe a week left. Next couple things just to make you aware of. There are two separate Delta Protection Commission meetings, one on the Delta Primary Zone that are taking place. The Delta Primary Zone meeting, there was one tonight in Brentwood, one tomorrow in Thornton, and another in Rio Vista on Tuesday, November 9th, and I can leave these in the back if you're interested. The next Delta Protection meeting that is taking place is a series of meetings, and it's the second round of the community forums on the economic sustainability plan. And the first one in our area is the first one of the series, and it is in Oakley on November 8th in the morning from 9 to 10:30. And I will leave some of those for you as well. Then I also have, which kind of goes with code enforcement. Speaking of code enforcement, if you have any issues, concerns, you can send them to our office as well. We work with them on a regular basis. We also have monthly meetings with our communities, and we have a liaison from the CSD who comes to those meetings. So we are in touch with your community and code enforcement. So if you don't want to send it to them, you can send me an email, give me a call, and we'll turn it in for you. Also, the public works concerns with the hedges, you can send those to our office, and I'll send them over as well. But we do have some flyers from the Environmental Health Department about illegal dumping. It is a problem, so I will leave some of these for you as well. It gives some really handy numbers and information for the community. And then lastly, just an update on something we've been working on for a while, and you may or may not remember, we're trying to get grant funding for a Knights Environ Transportation Study, where that would just study the transportation corridors in the East County area. Regret to inform you that, again, in the cycle of the Caltrans grants, they project did not receive any funding, so we're still working on that, and we'll continue to give you updates. And that is it.
I will thank you, Karen, for that report. I want to say that I had some interaction, and I know staff did also, with Kevin Amons over in the Public Works Department, or in the Road Department. I'm not sure what department he's in, but he's part of Public Works. And he was fantastic. He was just a pleasure to work with. He explained things. He returned phone calls immediately. And I just want to say that those guys did a good job working with not a difficult situation, but a complicated situation with schools and everything else. So I want to give kudos to that department.
Perfect. That's what we like to hear, and I will be sure to pass it on to him.
Any other questions for the supervisor's office? Any from the public for the supervisor's office? Karen, thanks again for being here. Appreciate your report. Okay, consent calendar. Before we move forward, I just want to read another prepared statement. Questions have been asked lately with regards to items on the consent calendar. I don't know that they were actually addressed properly, so I wanted to say that nothing has changed, but for clarification and consistency, let me make this statement. The board tries to always maintain open dialogue with the community. In doing so, the community is always invited to speak to an issue on the consent calendar prior to the acceptance of the calendar. The usual guidelines are in place with regards to the 3-minute rule, but comments are invited. And if there has been times in the past, I actually called staff and asked them this question, that I have neglected to ask for comments from the public prior to the consent, I apologize. It's been oversight on my part. So at this point, Mr. Richardson has filled out a form, which makes it even easier for me not to forget, that says that he would like to speak to a specific item on the consent calendar, and I would invite him to come forward and do that at this time. Could you pass that to Carol for me, please?
And that specific item is the D5 minutes of the regular meeting for October 20th.
Okay.
And in those minutes that we received, there's a statement attributed to me that, in effect, makes me look like Ebenezer Scrooge before his conversion. And I didn't say what's attributed to me. It really misses the point of what I was saying about the internship program. What is stated is, attributed to me, stated that his experience with the internship program that he had at his firm was a waste of time. That's not at all what I said, but I know where that came from. I did say in my comments that in my experience over 24 years in my architectural firm, where we had many interns, in some cases we felt we did some good. In other cases, we felt it was a waste of time. And by cases, I meant people. Some people that we dealt with, we thought we got some good out of the experience, and others we felt we were wasting our time, they were wasting their time. Now, what's missing from this is the overall message that I was trying to give in my comments, and I think I did, was the investment was always one way. We put in more effort for the intern than we ever got out of the intern. And that was okay. We did that intentionally, knowing that we weren't going to get much out of it, feeling that we had an obligation to do that with our own private money. And that comes across nowhere in the minutes. And I believe Director Tetral also said, and I believe he and I were the only people in that meeting who had hands-on experience with internship programs. And Director Tetral is currently ongoing, and I believe he said the same thing. And he can speak for himself, but that's what I wanted you to change in the minutes. They're not accurate as they stand.
Okay, thank you for that, Bill. I do recall the conversation, and I don't know at this point the process for this, or if it, because the meetings are on audio on the website for accuracy purposes, that really is where you're going to get the most accurate recording of what happens in the meeting. With regards to this situation, I'm going to refer to counsel for some advice.
Well, the problem we have with our minutes is they're more detailed than they need to be, and when you do that, then you run into this problem. Probably the simple solution, since the comments were recorded on the last meeting, recorded on this meeting, is to state that Mr. Richardson commented on the internship program and put a minutes as a neutral comment, because if you go beyond that, then you have to take a paragraph.
Understood. Appreciate that. Thank you, counsel. Which brings up another point that we'll get to in a minute. Let me write this down. Hold on 1 second. Okay, thank you for your advice on that, counsel, and I do. I understand what you said, and you were consistent in both meetings, Bill. I believe you said the same thing twice, and, and acknowledge that the written minutes may not be as accurate as the audio minutes, but we'll go ahead and rely on the audio minutes for accuracy. Any comments on the consent calendar from the board? Any other comments from the public with regards to the consent calendar? Motion?
Make a motion we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Great, we got it thirded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Moving to our large list of action items. I hope you guys don't stay here for all this. Staff? As briefly as possible, Stan.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was getting my papers in order.
Take all the time you want.
This is the agreement with T-Mobile. It's coming back to you. Again, it was at our last meeting on October the 6th. At that time, the board had some questions with respect to the monthly rents, the lease fees, the building itself that's going to house the equipment. And so I've been working with the with T-Mobile Corporation to iron those issues out. And coincidentally, we were talking 3% annually, and they just dropped in 4%. So we got an extra percent out of them a year. So that was pretty good. I was happy to see that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're benevolent or they just copied off of another agreement that they had that worked out for us. We do have the opportunity to lease future ground space if and when T-Mobile utilizes co-locatable equipment. If Verizon were to come in or AT&T and want to put equipment onto their tower, they can do that, and then they lease the space to those companies. But the ground space lease would come back to us, and we would receive any future income from that. The mechanical equipment area that's going to be constructed was originally going to just be a fence. It's now going to be, if you remember where the pump station is over there by Slifer Park, there's a split face block wall around it. It's going to be outside that split face block wall, but they're going to build a structure to look just like it's a part of the building. It'll be about 4 inches off the current wall, but it's going to have a roof on it. We had some concerns that possibly kids could hop that wall, hop a split fence wall, and hide out in there and do things that they shouldn't be doing. And so they went ahead and agreed that they would put a roof on that as well. So I was happy with that change. And those are the major changes that I can think of at this point in time. The final draft was put on your desk this afternoon. We received it late yesterday afternoon from T-Mobile. What was in the agenda packet was a prior version of it, and it's been finalized. So I think it's ready to go. I'm pretty pleased with the results. We did have a member of the community that volunteered to take a look at it that's in this business. And Jim reviewed it and came up with some pretty good ideas. And so they didn't always agree. They didn't agree with all of his suggestions, but we compromised on a couple of them. One was a termination clause, so we were able to get a little bit out of that as well. I don't expect that they'll tear the thing down anytime soon, so it's going to be up there for quite some time.
Director Sun.
One of the things that we looked at was a start date. Okay? At one point, they were talking about no rent while they put this thing together, and we felt there should be.
Yes, thank you for bringing that to my attention. There will be they have approximately, remember there was originally a two-year pre-lease, if you will, that's now down to 9 months, and that as soon as they execute the agreement, they will give us $2,000 just to execute the agreement. They then have 9 months to go through the building permit process, get the building permit, or design it, order it, building permit process, and then once they pull building permits, we will start getting the regular, that's when the lease will kick into effect. And in the interim period, we'll get a couple $1,000 out of that.
Per month.
Let me ask you one other question. Are we putting any kind of a clause in here? Let's say that they start the process, but then they decide they want to let this go a little longer, then maybe they don't want to put it up right away. They may want to take a year, a year and a half. We have some kind of a limit on when they have to apply for building permits?
They only have 9 months. If they exceed the 9 months, the lease is dead.
Okay.
Brian?
No.
Ray?
No.
Any comments from the public? Ms. Richardson?
I know you don't get a free call.
Where does the money go? Which budget does that go into when you get that money from T-Mobile?
That will be a determination of the board.
Thank you.
Whoever made that decision.
Any other questions or comments from the public? Mr. Steele?
How many years is the lease?
The initial lease is a 5-year lease with 5 5-year renewals.
So it's a 25-year lease.
It's a 30-year lease.
30-year lease, okay. Yes. And then what is there other antenna sites located in Discovery Bay for other competitors?
T-Mobile has another one, I believe, right outside.
Right next to the new pump, yeah.
There are a few of them around. The problem with Discovery Bay is, you know, it's flat. Mm-hmm. And so the difficulty with this one is that it needed to get above certain height in order to have a range that was suitable for, it's not the phone needs, it's the data needs that go through, mm-hmm. It's the data requirements. And so they are looking at, you know, one here, one in Discovery Bay, one down the road. I can't think of the term that they use for that. I want to say piggybacking on each other, daisy chaining them along, so to speak.
I would just, I'm a Verizon customer, so I want to make sure Verizon has the same access to that pole. So it sounds like the lease is set up that they can sublease to their competitors at their rate. So we have no control of the sublease, or do we have to approve the sublease?
No, there's a covenant in the agreement that says that we will work cooperatively on those types when they bring someone else. I'm not sure if it's federal law. I think it's FCC.
Yeah, it's an FCC requirement.
FCC requires that you have to provide co-locatable opportunities. So if Verizon did want to come on board, I'm sure that they probably will at some point in time and utilize space 10 feet below where T-Mobile is going to be. They could certainly do that, which would improve service.
All right. No, thank you. That's great.
Any other comments or questions? Are you looking for action on this this afternoon? This
yes,
evening?
I would like to have a board. I would recommend that the board approve the lease and authorize the board president to execute the lease documents.
I'll make a motion that we approve this lease as this final report, and that we authorize the president to sign the lease.
I'll second.
You guys are on the ball. Hearing that, I would ask for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you for working out that stuff, staff, and please convey our appreciation to Mr. Madison for his contribution.
I will. Fantastic job.
Okay, I'm not even going to say, I'm not even going to assume that these reports are in here, because the last time I made that assumption, transplant report. County Planning Commission report. We've already had a code enforcement report. Did staff have anything to report on a special district report?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Now we will move to chair report and director's comments. We'll start with director's comments. Do the directors have anything that they would like to say this evening?
I just have something very simple.
I find that so hard to believe.
I want to talk to you, I make it simple. I wanted to congratulate Brian.
Okay,
Kevin, for actually being elected to the board, and I want to congratulate Chris Steele as our newest member.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
That concludes my report.
Wow. Thank you for making it simple. I understood that.
Director Tetra?
That's what I was going to say, but he did.
Mr. Dawson?
I'd like to congratulate everyone as well.
And I would. I have a couple of things. What are you doing?
Keep going. I'm just getting ready.
I have ADD, man. This makes it really tough, okay?
Can't spell ADD.
Yeah. I have a report. I went along with our wastewater and water manager to the East County Water Management Association meeting, which I do on a quarterly basis, I believe, as I'm authorized to do by the board. And it occurred last Wednesday night, or Thursday night, excuse me, which just happened to be the second game of the World Series. And therefore, it was a very short meeting. Everybody gave their report. It's here in my written report. There was not much contributions from anybody else, although Virgil did speak a bit about some of the success we're having with our wetlands project, as well as the fact that I watched 2,000 gallons a minute come out of well 6 today. It was pretty cool. I wish my shower head did that. Man, it was a lot of water. And so we commented on that. I have a report for that. And I would like to just commend the citizens of Discovery Bay that decided to get involved in including the three of us here, and also Mr. Silver and Mr. McVitty, who's not here this evening, and just say I applaud you guys for getting involved in a situation it takes a lot of time, effort, emotional investment, and everything else, and I just want to thank you guys for making the effort to be involved. Other than that, you're on, sir.
I just have two quick items. One, the RFPs for the water wastewater services were received. They were due in on Monday, and those were received and distributed to the committee. And then the other one has to do with Well 6 that the president was just referring to, and I just have three or four quick photos. This picture is out, I don't know if you can see it very well. It's out at well 6, which is the new well that was just pumped right outside here, right by the fence. And this is just a picture of a bunch of guys standing around. But it's the engineers, the contractor, and the folks that, the people that put the pump in 300 feet underground. It's quite an engineering challenge.
Hold that photo for 1 second.
Yeah.
That's the T-Mobile tower right there that we keep referring to in the background, just for clarification.
This is the actual well itself, that square block of concrete that those three gentlemen are standing over. Goes about 300 feet down into the ground. This was the first, as we've started up once before, just on a quick test, but all the engineers and technicians were out today. And when they started it up, you can see the water coming out of that, and that water doesn't really show up real great in that picture, but that's real brown water. It's really not very pleasant to look at. But the neat thing is, after about 30 seconds, it looked like that. It was really clear, and we ran that for a period of time throughout the day, testing equipment, that sort of thing. So we're really happy to have that online. That will now provide us an opportunity. If one of our other wells were to go down, we now have a backup to make sure that we can continue to provide water to the community. And that's all I have.
So that plan to strike oil didn't work, huh?
No, we didn't get that far.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm seem to want to get out of here for some reason. Thank you for that report, legal counsel.
No report.
Thank you, sir. Correspondence is listed and in the agenda packet, a public record request. It was a pretty active month. Future agenda items. Shoot.
I'd like for the board to discuss the anonymous public records requests and come up with a policy.
I believe that, okay. Yeah. And we'll get that on a future agenda. I'm not sure it'll be on the next one.
That's
because
fine.
Legal counsel is going to have to do some work, and staff and myself and legal counsel are going to have some discussions on that.
I've already submitted a memorandum to the board on the rights for anonymous requests, and I have talked to the general manager, and I'm sure he's talking to the president
okay.
about coming up with a policy for all public records requests.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Any future agenda, Ray? Okay, I have a couple. First of all, as you will recall, when we talked about getting the website up and getting audio tapes put onto the website of the meetings, we also discussed the fact that we would no longer need to take detailed minutes because the audio tapes will take care of that. So I would like to put on the future agenda items the adaptation of what is called, help me out, counsel?
Action item minutes,
correct?
Yeah, would be an action item on direction as to the composition of minutes.
But that type of minutes that I'm looking for?
Which I believe what you're referring to is not the agenda item, but the minutes you're looking to is the trend towards brief minutes, which
yeah,
they
exactly.
just contain the board action, the motions,
and who appeared on public comment without a narrative.
Thank you. I believe that we are confident now that the website's working in a proper way and we can move forward with that. One other item that I would like to put on the I had written it down, but Mrs. Richardson brought up is the discussion of the funds from T-Mobile and where, how those will be used within the district. And that's all I have. Let's go home. You can hang around.
Oh, I need you to sign here.
Can I sign on Mark's name?
Sure.
Sure, wherever you want to sign. Can you sign on his name?
Yeah, do I sign this too?
Not that one. I'm going to have to
do it. Do I need to do that now?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great letter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, guys.
We did care.
Huh?
We all did.
Thank you. Hey,
Oh, the letter for direction.
Two more board members. And then the other thing is I can't have a letter.